T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning, January 14th, Friday. No Filter Friday. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk to Jeffrey Singer, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, works in a Department of Health Policy Studies. We'll talk about policies in and around COVID-19. When does this become an endemic? How do we deal with that? What's going to be the best course of action? In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll talk to Christiana Lima, tech newsletter reporter anchoring the Technology 202 for the Washington Post. Have you ever signed off on those terms and conditions of websites, and it's just kind of a nuisance? You just check the box. You got to read it. It's amazing what you give up and what you agree to. And even as a lawyer, I have to say, I'm guilty. I just look at it as a nuisance, check it, move on. Read this article and started reading several of them last evening. Oh, my God. It's amazing the rights that you give away. And joining us now, Mark Hamrick, senior analyst, bankrate.com, comes back for a second time this week, and we are fortunate that he does and continues to agree to. I haven't screwed that up yet, Mark, have I?
You are a good friend, and, you know, it's your birthday week, but I get the present of being on twice with you. And secondly, you do you really mean no filter, or where do those terms and conditions begin?
There are no terms and conditions on no filter Friday, trust me.
Okay, very good.
It can get a little dicey, Mark, much like these jobless claims numbers. One thing we know for sure, they are dynamic. They're moving all
over
the place.
Well said. Yeah, that's well said, and that's been really the case with a lot of the economic data we've been looking at lately. Today's, I want to sort of steal the headline there, because I do think the jobless claims in the job market are among the most important things to watch, with retail sales number came in on the dramatically, surprisingly negative side this morning. But back to the jobless claims, you know, we have to remember that we're coming off of a strong history here, where we had the lowest new applications for unemployment benefits in about 50 years in recent weeks. So we did have a bump, and it was really across the board. Louisiana is among the states that saw an increase. And nationally, we were up by 23,000 to 230,000. Before the pandemic, we would have been perfectly happy to have had a number at 230,000, and certainly during the pandemic, generally, we tend to be impressed by that number. But looking at, for example, New York and California, they had increases of more than 10,000 new claims. Here in Louisiana, that increase was nearly 1,000 to 2,616. So I do think this is the first indication that Omicron is possibly having impact on the job market, but this doesn't distract us or perhaps do away with the narrative that the job market remains tight. It remains tight. Employers continue to struggle to get the workers they want and need.
It does reveal one thing, though, does it not, that public health policy that's instituted or implemented by local elected officials can very much influence these numbers nationally when you look at major markets such as New York, L.A., Seattle, Chicago, or otherwise, these numbers can move quickly when just these major markets engage in more restrictive policies.
Well, I mean, I would have said that before this week, but I'd also say it's hard to discern where that begins and ends in something like this. because, you know, we've had tremendous and still do have tremendous variations in those policies across the country, whether it's on a municipal, state basis. And obviously, within the last 24 to 48 hours, the nature of a vaccine mandate for large companies has been ruled, you know, essentially unconstitutional. So here's what I also say about that. You know, we had essentially a 2% decline in retail sales on the month, 1.9%. That was reported this morning for December, but compared to a year ago, whether it's for the quarter or the month of December, in other words, the fourth quarter compared to a year earlier or the month of December compared to a year earlier, is essentially up about 17%. So we're still doing well on a year-over-year basis, and it's interesting because that decline of 2% on a monthly basis, or 1.9 to be precise, on the retail sales correlates to one estimate, which is the number of people who have been sidelined from the workforce during this time of heightened COVID positivity and obviously in many locations, hospitalizations. So, you know, are those things all occurring at the same time? Absolutely. How much they contribute to one another, we don't know.
Mark, and I can't remember the scientific theory, but when you have these disruptions like this, like you creating momentum and then, you know, these numbers are changing. They're very positive, then they move a little bit negative, then they move a little positive. This can't be something that economists obviously like to see, but does it have an exponential effect on the economy moving forward? In a negative way, yeah. With this uncertainty and just disruption?
That's a great question. That's so smart. I feel like I should just give a 30 seconds of homage here because I might need that time to catch up. But, you know, it's interesting because I was thinking this morning as we try to analyze all these numbers, one of the hardest things for us to do, I'm just putting that on me as a member of a team and to some degree just of the community that tries to analyze these things. I think the hardest thing to do is to recognize change when it's in process. You know, there's a tendency, and there's a word for it in the sense of bias, there's a tendency to want to think that things will be the same as they have been recently. And economists do that all the time with, for example, forecasting the monthly change in payrolls. Be like, well, what's the average of the last 3 months? You know, and but yet if you're experiencing dramatic change in a given time, whether it's a month over month or over a period of time, that's hard to recognize. So let's break that down or think about it with respect to the consumer's mindset. Let's face it, these past 2+ years have been something, right? And that's to engage the filter there. And so I do think that there, you know, does get to be kind of like a, at the risk of overstating it, kind of a traumatic impact on people's psychology. And when it's a, when it's the pandemic, when it's political discord in our society, some might say the threads of our social dynamic have become unraveled to some degree, and then you pile on inflation and an Omicron variant and the impacts of climate change or at least extreme weather, I do think that those things do pile on. And it may be that if we think about, let's say, the historical example of how people adjusted to the Great Depression, where they were less trusting of banks. That was a much different era with respect to regulation and protection of investor deposits that we enjoy today. But how people were had their psychology undermined by that horrible experience when the official unemployment rate, at least as best we can guess, was something on the order of, you know, 25 to 30%. And we had no social safety net to speak of back then, at least on a governmental basis. Did tremendous damage. And I do worry that that sort of the underlying human psyche here in our, I'll just say in our country, is quite frayed at the moment. And, you know, I think you and I, you know, had often talked early in the pandemic about looking forward to the great reopening. And we, to some degree, we have had that. And that year-over-year increase in retail sales of 17% is to some degree representative of that. But the other part is, you know, the hits keep on coming. And I think we'd like to get a breather for a change.
Is it fair to say that at some base level, you know, our consumers are kind of the same, you know, when we look back historically, but that this redefining of consumers, the who, what, why, and where of consumers, do we not really have our finger on that pulse right now, and we're still waiting for that, for the new image?
Well, I'm going to answer the question maybe parallel to what you're asking about, but perhaps answer in a different way. And that is, sometimes someone will ask me about the consumer, right? And I'll say, well, who is the consumer? Because in a country where, you know, we have 300 million plus people, you know, we've had the dynamic of the rich getting richer and to some degree the poor getting poorer for quite some time now. You know, it's quite a different story. You're talking about one consumer to another. And at a time when inflation, for example, is raging, that undermines the ability of lower wage consumers to adjust than those who are in the sort of luxury category you know, may or may not have to make any adjustment whatsoever. So I will say that, well, to try to answer your question in a more specific way, I think with the surveys that, for example, we do at Bankrate and when we're looking at economic data in general, what we really try to do is look across the spectrum at, well, how are lower income Americans doing? How are those who have modest or higher incomes doing? And the answer is, you know, it varies widely. But then you try to look for the trends that are in common, and you can distill some things there as well.
I just, you know, in my lifetime, I don't remember certainly the duration of this one. You know, we're going into the third year now where you've had this complete disruption of an American lifestyle. Yeah. You know, and this, the social science aspect of that, I got to imagine, is incredibly difficult for economists and others that forecast a lot of important things, and policies are made on that economic forecasting. And a lot of it has to do with the psyche of the consumer, right? I mean, I don't think I'm
understanding
this.
No, and I think, in fact,
it struck me, you know, as I was reading last night, that this ebb and flow, it happens all the time, but not this quick. You know, you don't typically see it for so many months, month over month, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. And I got to imagine, you know, that there's just this exponential amount of disruption that's out there that we've yet to even really quantify.
No, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely fingers on the pulse there, as best I could tell. And, you know, that's why, for example, when I'm analyzing a survey, whether it's on you know, the inclination of people to express their confidence or lack thereof in the economy, it's important to look at their political affiliation, you know, because, you know, Republicans were feeling better before the last presidential election, and they're feeling less optimistic right now. And we know that approval ratings for the current president have dropped, and that's, among other things, representative or reflective of the pandemic and inflation. And the buck does stop at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And so there's no getting away from that. And so when you have all these cross currents in the economy occurring all at once, it's quite difficult. And this, to the initial part of your question, this may be a good example of where we actually do need people to study social sciences when they go to college, because ultimately some of these things do matter.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of strikes me. I mean, I know the Fed's going back and forth. You know, everybody was very secure in them saying they might tweak interest rates twice. Now it's becoming a more prevalent conversation, possibly three times. Some economists are saying it could be as many as four. The numbers are changing so quick. There seems to be a lot of exigency around it, but there also seems to be some confusion as to how to remedy it.
Yeah, and as soon as Jerome Powell and his colleagues can make semiconductors, you know, that would be very helpful, and to get 80,000 truck drivers trained and to fully employ people in the ports, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, what we do know is that the Federal Reserve can kill demand, or at least reduce it by raising interest rates. And obviously that's not their intention. They simply want to remove essentially the jet fuel that they've been responsible for in helping the economy to expand over a period of time. A lot of it is in the system that can't be removed, that was through two presidents and two sets of lawmakers on Capitol Hill. But the reality is that Jerome Powell and his colleagues can talk all they want about getting interest rates back to more nominal, normal levels, and that's their intention, at least to get them higher and to remove other tools from the environment that they put into play. But, you know, to the earlier point, there's so much that's out there that they cannot resolve. That's why a lot of this is just going to have to play itself out, particularly with the supply chain disruptions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you read that unemployment claims are the lowest that they've been since 1973, I believe, you know, we're about 2.2 million jobs smaller than before the pandemic. I always like to go back to the 2019 numbers to compare these things. But we have so many numbers floating around, I think people are really getting confused. And, you know, the deal for me is that economic forecasting, they never really hit it right on the spot, but they're always really, really close, right? And
well, broadly, the consensus anyway, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And and that's what I'm talking with, a broad brush. But it seems as though we've become a little bit picayune-ish. We're honing in on some of these details, and we're missing it. And that's the lead of the stories, right? We're missing it. We missed it. We missed it again. We missed it again. And I just think that kind of influences the confidence. But I do recognize the difficulty of doing this with what's happening here, because we're, from a public policy standpoint, we're so fragmented across this country. And the manner in which we've, you know, kind of squelched local economies, micro economies in some areas as opposed to other areas, I got to imagine this is probably the toughest time that in my lifetime to be an economist.
Probably so, in the sense that you don't, as Jerome Powell himself has said, you don't essentially have a template to take off the shelf that says, well, you know, how does the pandemic behave with globalization and technology and everything else that exists as it does in 2021-22. You know, I think that's why being nimble and trying to be thoughtful is important. And to your earlier point, I really appreciate that, because, I mean, it's no secret that I have the wonderful opportunity to work with all kinds of friends in media, I'll put it broadly, television, radio, print, newspapers. And going on financial television is its own flavor of things. And inevitably, the first question is, you know, why did people get it wrong, right? And that's a good question to ask, but that's of interest to traders and short-term investors. I think the average person, other than, you know, being curious about the state of play and what to expect, couldn't really care less what the forecast was and how accurate it was. They want to know what's happening. And so I do think that that is the more, you know, it's the intermediate and long term that really matter. But of course, you know, if you have a hurricane bearing down in the short term, you need to be taking steps to mitigate against that as well.
See, my more simplistic answer, Mark, would have been, it wasn't in the study materials.
I like that. Yeah.
None of this.
We didn't know it was going to be on the test. Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't in the material. That stuff.
I'm going to write that one down right now. Next time you ask me the question, that'll be my answer.
Well, first, please accept my apology for going off on a tangent on No Filter Friday, but that's the risk of coming on this show on No Filter.
I like it. Believe me, if I can get away from, you know, the usual suspects in terms of questions to answer, that makes my day. So I appreciate it.
All righty, my friend. Well, have a great weekend. Appreciate you joining us again this week.
Thank you, Newell. Have a great weekend. Thanks for having me.
All righty, folks. That's Mark Hamrick, senior analyst, bankrate.com. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Would love to hear from you. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the capture of the youths that escaped from the New Orleans juvenile jail. I understand they booked them right back into that same facility. Is that wise? We'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Snow Filter Friday, we'll talk about anything that you want to talk about. Let's go to the talk lines. Bob, you're up. Welcome to the show. Go ahead,
Bob. Yeah. Hey, Newell?
Yes.
Listen, I have a question. Last year this time, everything was about shutdown for COVID, Mardi Gras and all that. What is the difference this year that they're going to have Mardi Gras when the COVID cases... I think he had 15,000 cases the other day, which talking on the news. What is the difference this year? Seems
politics.
Like it's more widespread than ever.
Politics. That's what's different this year. They recognize that the restrictive policies and mandates destroyed their local economies. They're not doing well in the polls. Their popularity's down. Their job satisfaction is in the tank. It's all politics.
Politics and money.
And I'm not saying that to be critical. I'm saying that just to be honest. The fact of the matter is, and I said from day one that finding the balance between saving lives and livelihoods was going to be a very slippery slope, tricky thing. But it can't be so heavy-handed that we destroyed the psyche of our city, of our parish, of our state. And our economies at the same time. And now, after 2 years into this, we are recognizing that in many respects, a lot of local elected officials, state elected officials, and others, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, you're not seeing as many of these folks go back to this situation. Plus, Omicron's a little different, right? I mean, it is a little different in the way that it reveals itself. And we've said this before. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. But you still want to try and minimize your risk. That's all this is about. And that's what I said from day one. I took a lot of heat in the comparison early onset between flu and COVID. But most people misunderstood what I was saying. It's about minimization of risk. And as long as we stay true to the mantra that our goal was to not overwhelm the healthcare delivery system, we were going to be okay. But it's when we broke away from that goal that we thought that we were going to alter Mother Nature and the way that these things work, and that we were going to eradicate this disease. One way or the other, we lost our way.
Exactly.
And we didn't follow the science. And
I mean, that's the issue. We're overwhelming the healthcare system right now. And I can only imagine what's going to happen when you get thousands of people coming here for Mardi Gras.
And positivity rates and case counts are, you know, they're good to talk about. The fact of the matter, though, is that we really need to be worried about hospitalizations.
Exactly.
And that's what we need to be focused on. And look, we have a lot more arrows in our quiver right now. We have some therapeutics, although we're not producing them at a rate fast enough. We have vaccines, obviously. We now have boosters. The problem of, you know, that we're experiencing right now is boostering our way through this pandemic, where we have these variants coming at us in 3, 6, 7 month increments. It's hard for the science to stay up with what is being revealed. Omicron obviously was a curveball because it revealed itself in a way unlike previous. In fact, it hardly even resembles the original COVID-19 variant. Just 2 year period of time, we've traveled a long path thus far as it relates to this pandemic. And I think a lot of people lose sight of it. And that's why I don't say that to be critical. It's just the reality.
Exactly.
There's a lot of unknown, and it's very, very dynamic, and it's changing the time.
I think what officials are hoping for, they're hoping for the so-called curve to start going down before March the 6th when Mardi Gras is here. But I don't see it doing that. I mean, with 15,000 cases the other day in one day, plus, that's added to the hospitals, they added to everything. I don't know. It's scary, really.
So, anyway, but I appreciate it. And you know, I'm getting, thank you for the call, getting text. You were so eager to slam Democrats, you forgot all about the vaccine. Ridiculous. Listen to me, folks. I said it wasn't a criticism. It's a reality. Now we're understanding, and we have a better grasp of what it means to infringe upon and squelching livelihoods. We've seen the downstream implications of it. We've seen the tears in the streets, the blood in the streets. We've seen it all. So there is a reluctance to go back to that. And they're getting slammed in public opinion surveys. It's a fact. We can stare the obvious in the face and walk right around it. Then I got another text. Oh, now you want to go back and cover your proverbial butt. I'm sure I wasn't the only one to text you that. Text me what? The vaccines were created under Donald Trump, under Warp Speed. The implementation or the distribution started. It continued under President Biden's administration. I've said all along, this is a personal health decision that you got to make for yourself. Do the research. Figure it out whether or not. I love the folks, and I can't say it other than this: ignorant, ignorant. Well, you know, I'll take this this, or I'll take that, or I'll take that therapeutic. I'll take that. So wait. Weren't you the one that was just criticizing the emergency use authorization process? Well, yeah. Well, don't you realize that those same medications have just been recently approved under an EUA? So your criticism of the vaccine and that we haven't studied it enough and everything else, and your fallback position is to go to a medicine that was approved under the exact same process. Now, can you call that anything other than idiocracy? I can't think so, right? And speaking of idiocracy, let's talk about the Utes that have escaped from the New Orleans juvenile jail. They still have one at large. They've captured three. We have the director of that facility saying that they have staffing challenges there. That's not unusual. Everybody's having that. There was a breach of protocol that involved human error before the escape. The employees of the juvenile lockup gave chase, but the youth split up and outran them. These are bad kids. These are really bad kids. So what are we going to do? We know that we have challenges in the in this facility. We thoroughly criticized Sheriff Marlon Guzman for having housed them in an adult facility, albeit segregated from adults. We always drop and seem to forget that that's what the role was. They were segregated. So this was a symbolic thing to bring them back to this juvenile facility that's not nearly as secure as the adult facility. But be that as it may, you voted for it. This is what you got. You got it, Toyota. You wanted it. You got it, Toyota. Now you're living with the consequences. The question is, how long do you want to live with the consequences? How long before you take these leaders to task, hold their feet to the fire, and begin to start to affect change? There was a great piece in Black Source Media that someone sent me, and I couldn't have said it better myself as to what was going on. The author of the piece is Kenneth Cooper. I'm not familiar with Mr. Cooper. I'd love to talk to Mr. Cooper. Don't know where to find Mr. Cooper. But nonetheless, he starts out by saying, CARE might have forgotten about New Orleans, but crime sure has not. The city achieved a recent high for murders last year. The number was 218. That was the most murders since pre-Katrina. What a generational achievement. You would think it would be marked and analyzed with as much hoopla as other deplorable statistics the city is known for. Instead, the most prominent recognition of this accomplishment was noteworthy for the wrong reasons. It was the sound of semi-automatic rifles echoing shots through the air on New Year's Eve night. He then goes in and, you know, goes through the system. Over at the DA's office, he says DA Jason Williams is too busy patting himself on the back. As he would tell any reporter, successfully implementing his soft-on-crime strategy was a cause for celebration. It's the beginning of a transformational approach to dealing with crime in the city. His critics are not amused. Criminals, they say, will not be prosecuted and given stiff life learning sentences. They're now being released with a fist bump and a nod before safely returning to terrorize the streets. We don't have to go far back in history to see that. These youths that escaped from the juvenile jail, they carjack somebody to affect their getaway, right? Victimized citizens, they say, are urged patience, while this benevolently counterintuitive approach bears fruit. Meanwhile, there's a new sheriff in town, vowing to team up with the DA and reduce the prison population even more. We'll continue with his comments and opinion when we return. Stay with us, folks. On the text line, while black men lay dead in the streets from being shot by the outlaw cops, you always say, step back and take a deep breath. Well, that's what Jason is saying. It's called BS. You use it every time a cop kills. You know, it's interesting, in 2020, and I had my 2021 number somewhere, and I can't find it right now, but there were 237 black folks that were shot by the police in 2020. There were 218, the vast majority in the city of New Orleans, of victims of homicide that were black. So let's put things in their proper perspective before we go off and running, right? Back to the piece that Mr. Cooper wrote, and I love his wordsmithing, and he continues on saying, and the outgoing council says nothing. With murders and shootings on the rise and citizens riding around at night in search of a safe place to park or pump gas, candidates for the city council collectively campaign on a slogan of see no crime, hear no crime. Meeting violence with silence, the candidates decided to get tough on Entergy and the Sewage and Water Board instead. Yes, even though now you stand a higher chance of being shot or murdered, you can rest assured knowing that the council is fighting to make sure that you have more money to pay for your funeral or hospital bills via lower rates for electricity and water. And then over at the mayor's office, the mayor's like, what crime? For her part, made it a priority not to make crime a priority during her campaign. The 12 other people running against her did neither. Since her landslide victory, Mayor Cantrell has been out and about vowing to be tough on COVID and Mardi Gras. Despite a highly contagious virus spinning variants like 45s and a murder rate off to a rip-roaring start, Carnival will be televised. It marks a return to normal for New Orleans. Citizens must take the necessary precautions, of course. Proper protection includes masks, hand sanitizer, Clorox wipes, and a healthy amount of Kevlar. And then the Ute. Meanwhile, we are now on the upteenth generation of black kids left to roam the city with nothing to do, with their most likely immediate career path leading to bartender or waiter. Kids observe the lay of the land and choose to hustle on the streets instead. Cycles of city council representatives have brought little investment to their communities. To this day, you're still more likely to find a 40-ounce in stores in black neighborhoods as opposed to an apple or a book. Supplying kids with blight, bad diets, and midnight basketball has done little to curb crime throughout the years. And since there's no sign of them pulling themselves up by their often missing bootstraps, this violent crime surge will probably be the new norm, just like COVID. And with that, Happy New Year, people. I can't disagree with a lot of the observations that this gentleman writes in this piece. And it's really all about, and I think what he's knocking is the lack of prioritization. We don't talk about these issues. We don't want to talk about these issues because, as he entitled the piece, fighting crime is a tough job, and apparently nobody wants to do it. And that could never be more true. Because we refuse to pull together an environment of collaboration in doing this, in staying the course. And you've heard me say this over and over and over again. The first 45 to 90 minutes of every day of your existence as a leader in this community, you should be focused on crime. First and foremost. And when you have to figure out where's safe to go pump your gas, we all have a problem. We'll be right back on No Filter Friday. Stay with us. It is No Filter Friday, folks. And after the top of the news break, we'll talk to Christiana Lima, tech newsletter reporter anchoring the Technology 202, focusing on politics and policy. Have you ever seen those terms of service that, you know, that you got to agree or disagree to before you get to the website sometimes? You might want to read them. They're kind of frightening. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that even as a lawyer, I never took the time to read it. It's just kind of a nuisance, an inconvenience. Just check the box and move on. Hell, you give up a lot of rights. A lot of rights about your personal information. Kind of scary. We'll talk about, yes, it's a bipartisan group of lawmakers in D.C. I know that's hard to believe, even on No Filter Friday. But there are some that agree that things should change. One of them is our own Senator Bill Cassidy. So we'll talk to Christiana Lima about that. And in the 12 o'clock hour, Jeffrey Singer will join us with the Cato Institute. Wrote an article this new year, Resolve to Abandon Zero COVID Mentality. We'll find out why that should be the case in the 12 o'clock hour. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.